Greetings, ladies and gentlemen. You are listening to the Castorbis podcast with a K, available on castorbis.com, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and Audio Boo.
One moment, I just need to clear my throat. Ladies and gentlemen, see how that worked? It really cleared my throat, didn't it? We do that bit. Sorry. It's the podcast. My name is Christian Corley. And with me this week are James McLean and Brian Terranova. Greetings, chaps.
Greetings.
It's greetings.
Whichever
you like. I messed it up. It was greetings, right? That's what we're doing this week. God, I ruin everything.
Greetings, yeah.
Yeah, I don't really think there's any predetermined thing on that.
Right, not that we tell the listeners. You're right. I'm sorry. I keep forgetting all the rules that we don't tell. We should just start over. I'm ruining it all.
Well, it's not like we tell we don't agree on much before the podcast. It's an informal affair. I think you both agree.
We're having an affair?
If we're going to start over, can we get a new Brian Terranova? like Peter Cushing? We could get, like, you know, they didn't want Hartnell, so they got Cushing. Could we get someone to replace him?
Well, who would we replace Brian with? An actor. Who would we replace Brian with? Not the guy out of that pop band that Brian always gets mistaken for. Not him.
Yeah. Please, no.
I don't know. Who would be good to replace Brian Terranova? I'd like David Duchovny.
Really? All right. Yeah, I like that suggestion.
I'd like that too, actually. I would not mind giving up my chair to David Duchovny being me for a day.
Okay. I want the guy who played Hero in Heroes.
All right, yes.
Just because he's a bit mad and quirky, like Brian.
Oh, that's very charming of you.
There we go.
You know I get jealous when you start complimenting him.
Indeed, indeed. So how's your posh life been, posh boy?
Well, I think it's been pretty quirky.
Okay.
And probably more so than Brian's. But,
really?
Right. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been reading lots of bits of Doctor Who news. Been a bit of Doctor Who news this week, hasn't there? Which is what I've been reading, and it's been making me particularly quirky.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. We're recording this, ladies and gentlemen, on Monday afternoon, and we are in the midst of the storm of the... I'll do a jingle for this bit as well later on. The series... Which series are we on? 8. The series 8 script leak. I might not do a spoiler. I might just leave that in.
Okay.
So essentially, 5 scripts have apparently been leaked online. I imagine this happened perhaps on Facebook or maybe on Gallifrey Base, although if it was on the latter, I imagine they would have been cut down pretty quickly. I've done a search and I can't find them.
Okay.
So I did a search for 2 reasons. I like reading scripts, so I was going to put them away until later. Basically, because I just like reading scripts, so I can turn my eye and my,
I can get behind that,
my writing sense into writing scripts. But I haven't been able to find them now, which is quite interesting because I'm quite an accomplished internet searcher. Googler, I think, is a good term for it. So if I haven't been able to find it, I think it's a good chance that the BBC have got things sewn up on this. They have, however, been quite aggressive in asking people not to even talk about this. Afraid we can't talk about this anymore. While we're on this topic of BBC Worldwide, I'd just like to thank them for the complimentary tickets that they promised us to last year's Doctor Who celebration. Oh, that didn't happen, did it? Right, so these scripts. So these 5 scripts have appeared online and they are being disseminated via various sources. And Brian has, in the last 10 minutes, made a big Facebook complaint and warning to people, which I've repeated on the Castorbis news page to avoid these particular sites. That a particular Facebook page. Can you recall what they were called, Brian?
Yeah, I don't see there's any issue with that. I mean, personally, I think what they're doing is completely wrong, so why not call them out for it?
Yeah,
it's the Doctor Who 50th Anniversary Zone.
That's That's the fellows.
Yeah, and I mean, they posted up. See, the thing that I don't get is, at first I thought, okay, this is silly. They're setting everybody up for a joke. And they made a post saying that they have 5 scripts and they're going to post massive spoilers starting at 3 o'clock. And at first I thought, okay, we're going to get there. The 3 o'clock is going to come and they're going to post this silly kind of just like a cartoon thing or maybe a joke or just whatever and just have fun with people until it came up. And I thought, that's what it's got to be. Because like you, I searched the net to try and see if this was true. Saw nothing. But then once the 3 o'clock time came and I only read the first sentence of one of their posts and I was like, you know what, this, after reading all the comments on their initial post where half the people were ticked off that they were doing this and unliking the page and other people were like, I love spoilers, bring it on. It just made me realize, you know, number one, how divided we are, but number two, just how wrong it is. Like the show is a month away, you know, maybe a little over a month away. And this is just wrong. You know, you're going to put all of these things out for a first episode that people are going to watch. I mean, I remember from series one, the massive spoiler, the massive event that was just destroyed after the first episode aired, which was Christopher Eccleston was leaving. You know, if this didn't get leaked, if they were able to keep it under wraps, we could have had a surprise regeneration.
Yeah.
So I don't want to see any of this stuff. I don't want to see it. Even if they're joking, even if they're guessing, even if somebody made this website and they're rolling off of it and the website is fake with fake spoilers and the 50th anniversary zone believes them to be true, I still think it's wrong. So it's that it's them that's doing it. And I just, you know, I don't feel it's gone.
Well, Doctor Who's in such a, yeah. Yeah, Doctor Who, since it came back, has had a repeated problem with spoilers being leaked in kind of big sense. You mentioned the Eccleston thing, but there was another one, wasn't there? There was the Rose tape itself.
Oh, yeah.
It leaked
online
about a fortnight before, I think.
Yeah.
A week or 2 weeks before. But through Canada with it was missing a few effects and it didn't have Murray Gold's arrangement. It had the Tom Baker era arrangement of the theme tune on it. But other than that, it was complete. Then you've got the Eccleston thing that you mentioned. Fast forward a bit, we've got scripts being lost on trains. We've got the Series 7B box set being released before Series 7B over in the United States. So people have been able to watch the episodes before they're on TV anywhere. And now we've got this. This apparently does seem to have come from BBC Worldwide. They're pointing towards the Latin American headquarters in Miami. Brian, why would the Latin America headquarters be in Miami?
No idea.
Okay.
No idea. We do have a lot of down south, I guess. Obviously, it's a lot easier to...
You call yourself American and you don't know why the Latin American offices are in Miami.
Oh, his lordship knows.
I'm
not American. James. I'm not American. Oh, he is. Okay. He should know things like this. This should be. Is this not a syllabus?
No, honestly, this is not something they teach us. This is just wherever they can place their businesses, where they're going to place them. I don't keep up on stuff like that. I know that they exist. That's all I need to know.
Okay, there are 5 scripts.
Yeah,
and BBC Worldwide have contacted Radio.
A bit like Keys to Marinus, isn't it? There's 5 scripts around the world you've got to go and search for. The first script,
yes,
by Terry Nation.
BBC Worldwide are currently investigating a security issue around Doctor Who Series 8, where unfinished material has inadvertently been made public. We deeply regret this and apologise to all the show's fans, the BBC, and the cast and crew who have worked tirelessly making the series. We would like to make a plea to anyone who might have any of this material and spoilers associated with it, not to share it with a wider audience so that everyone can enjoy the show as it should be seen when it launches. We know only too well that Doctor Who fans are the best in the world, and we thank them for their help with this and their continued loyalty. The opening episode is being simulcast globally, it would seem, which I think that's news. According to the Radio Times website, it is being simulcast globally. So, of course, translations have to be prepared in advance. I'm not sure what relevance that has to this. The scripts are understood to have been disseminated online after being sent to BBC Worldwide's newly opened Latin America headquarters in Miami for translation. That's interesting. We do know from this leak that we were talking about the feature-length episode, weren't we? last week when we discovered that Deep Breath was going to be feature length, but they hadn't said how long it was going to be, and it would seem that it's going to be 75 minutes long.
Right.
That's 1 hour 15. Which is quite exciting, I think. If we go back, you know, if we go back to 2005, without the trailer and the theme tune, Roses struggles to get past 36 minutes, I think.
Really?
Yeah. There's a big trailer at the end for the second, for the first series.
I mean, it can be good. I mean, it's like anything, isn't it? Anything that's long can be a struggle, can't it? As much as it can be.
I'm just getting double entendres when you say that. So, toilet humour. Sorry.
My only concern there would be if they do what they've done in the past, which is make an episode longer and actually just kind of waste the extra time with padding. I'm hoping that the reason it's longer is because they felt they had a good story to tell and they could use the extra time to do so. Because they've done a couple ones with good merit like that, but a lot of times when they just extend an episode, it just seems
like they
wasted the time.
Occasionally, yeah, you feel like I really wish this was a bit been punchier if it'd been shorter. So long doesn't necessarily mean good. At the same time, I think you're right. It is kind of exciting naturally to think, a longer episode, that is fun. So yeah. This is a very weird bit of news, isn't it? I mean, it sounds to me like obviously there's been some weakness in the flow of information or the flow of data between the standard practices and this new office, which has allowed these leaks to happen. What I find mildly concerning about it is when, and this has happened, this seems to be very much part of our new media age, is that when they're being exposed, not because people think it's news, or because I don't even think it's because they think people want to read it. It sounds to me, from what you were saying earlier about the Facebook thing, as if it's being used purely to gain traffic and interest. So it's either for attention or it's for making money through advertisement, if that is in that sort of area. I don't really, it seems very anti-fan, and yet some of the conduits seem to be through fan conduits, if you know what I mean. And that is what disturbs me a little about it. Because I feel very sorry. I mean, I know the BBC are apologising to fans and everything, but again, it was the same like when we had the issues with Night of the Doctor and the like, where that had to be released early because it was becoming very much clear that it was going to be leaked, news of it was going to be leaked. You feel sorry for the people involved in it. And the same for Name of the Doctor as well, when that accidentally got out on DVD early. You feel sorry for the people involved who worked so hard to try and keep it quiet, to keep it surprising, and they want to get that initial reaction, that excitement that people get when they first see something new, and they won't get it because they'll now be thinking this has already been seen by people. It'll already be judged before it comes out. And that is, I think, the saddest thing of this all, really. It's just so thoughtless. It's so unfair.
Well, there will be a lot of people who get to see the first episode before it comes out, because today, on Monday, the beginning of the Doctor Who tour starts on August 7th in Cardiff, and it was possible for fans to book online to view it for £11 a person, which isn't too bad, to watch it on the Thursday lunchtime on August the 7th. I opted not to because it's Cardiff and it's a bit of a trek from here. And so there will be things around. No doubt the BBC will put out or Stephen Moffat himself will say, please don't share any of this, as has happened in the past. Brian himself has been to a preview before everyone else got to see an episode, haven't you?
Yeah, but previews are fine because they're sanctioned. Choice. It's the people, it's the production's choice to allow that as part of publicity. But when fans take stuff out of the hands of the people who finance, run and manage this, for the sheer sake of what could be, and I could be wrong, they could come to us and tell us for a totally different reason, but it just feels like it's very self-focused rather than, you know, for fandom. And some people would probably leak it for fandom because they'd say, well, if you want to see it, if you want to read it, that's your choice. I'm someone who believes that it's the choice in the individual. Look what I've got. I was interested. You might be interested. If you're not, don't read it. That's fine. You know, I can understand someone having that mentality, but by and large, I think this sounds quite...
Well, it's a little bit like the modern version of the missing episodes, isn't it? How we were talking with Gareth about this several months ago, how, you know, that the old in the old days, episodes would, that hadn't been released or were missing or whatever, were screened on 16mm films, and people would get invited round to see them. And go, look what I've got. It's the modern version of that.
Yeah.
Just going on to, adding to what James said before, and a little bit Brian as well, with regards to how this has been used by fans and a particular type of fan, it's going to be used in a different way as well. I would not be surprised to see this search term quickly adopted by people who's attempting to spread malware. Back with my tech head here again. So really just don't go searching for it, because you might find something, you might find that, you know, there are links to malware on YouTube. There are links to malware through Google, despite the best efforts of Google to stop this from happening. And you could end up with a bit of a problem on your system if you do look for this and think you found something, end up downloading the wrong thing. It's really not worth it. Just wait a few weeks.
I know, it is only a few weeks. And again, as I say, it's you're doing it for the people who make it. I mean, whether you like Stephen Moffat's era or you don't, or you think Capaldi's going to be crap or you don't, they're still artists doing a job. Let them do their job.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. I don't think we've got anything more to add to that. Because we're getting into the realm of spoilers, and there's a few titles in there which don't appear to have been confirmed yet either. So you know, we don't know the exact date of the scripts that have been leaked, so those titles might have been changed. So we're not going to share those either. We're going to move on instead to a piece of paper which I've lost. Oh, yeah, the most recent trailer. Which you've both seen?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, and the description of the Doctor and the voice and the change and the Dalek-esque negative exterminating image. What do you think of that?
I thought it was a fun little trailer. I mean, nothing too spoilery, nothing too spectacular, but it was nice, a nice little taste to have something from the show again. You know. I've only seen it the one time, I will admit, though. I guess that kind of tells you a little bit about it. Generally, with those things, I can watch them over and over.
Okay. They're airing it a lot over here on BBC. They've repeated the trailer quite frequently.
I just want to check something. If you two can both be quiet a moment, and I'll maybe, we'll maybe have the soundtrack in the podcast for this bit. I just want to check something. Hmm, interesting. I was just double-checking something there, but it is okay. We can carry on now. So the dialogue, I see into your soul, Doctor. I see beauty, divinity, hatred. Who is speaking there? Is it more than one person speaking?
Well, it sounds like Davros to me, quite.
See, I've heard people say that too. It's the end bit when it talks that it sounds more like a Dalek to me. So I wonder if it's more like an Emperor Dalek or something like that. Like it doesn't have that Davros sound to it, where he's always been a bit more emotional, you know, a bit more deeper,
or,
I guess, if you will.
It could be a Davros that is intrinsically linked to the Daleks, which obviously has happened in things like Big Finish and even Remembrance of the Daleks.
It could even be both Davros and a different Dalek, like Kristen said. Is it one or two people?
That's what I thought. Or is it simply recorded for the trailer rather than actually being part of the episode?
Why
it's a good trailer.
Do we see those two hearts?
What did you just say?
Why do we see those two hearts? We know the Doctor's got two hearts. Why are we seeing two hearts?
Is it something to do with his soul? Is it to link with the soul, the inside? Is it just a very superfluous link like that?
Could be.
It does have a sort of like an extermination vibe to it. Is it? Is it all more about effect, that trailer, than it is about Data? That, you know, you've got a sort of extermination vibe which links the Daleks, which therefore links to Davros, you know, it's just these bits to, because it's a very good trailer like that, because it's got people talking, it doesn't give anything away, it's quite memorable, it's punchy. I think it's their best one so far.
And I want to know who's on the phone too.
True. Well, here's the thing too that I'm curious about. There's a couple things there. Is it just a trailer, just kind of to get us excited? Is it like the Christopher Eccleston trailer running down the hallway from a big fireball that we never got to see in the series, or is it kind of trying to give us a hint? And you know, without going spoilery here, this is just a thought on my part. this is the first Doctor after a brand new regenerative cycle, and he picks up the phone in the TARDIS, and then he gets that kind of Dalek-y kind of X-ray effect. What if it's not a Dalek-y kind of gun effect? What if somebody's actually scanning him? What if they're actually trying to find out mm-hmm. about him, since he's now been giving this second go and they want to understand it? You know, it could just be simply like that. So it's an interesting thought. I mean, yeah, it is a good trailer. I don't know why I've only watched it the once, to be honest. I just did. I saw it, I liked it, and then I kind of moved on. Maybe I will watch it again. I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah, I think it's good. I think it's better than the last trailer. It's, as I said, the last trailer didn't sound very coherent to me, and this one is far more punchier.
The last trailer was really just like a, you know, I mean, I get they're both teasers in a sense, but the last one was really just like a big tease. Like, you've been waiting so long, here, have 2 seconds. and I wasn't really too taken with it either. It was nice to see, but, you know, how often can you see the TARDIS blowing up?
Yeah.
You know, I think we see it quite a bit anymore, you know. But the new one definitely was much more interesting.
It's a shame when shows do that, isn't it? I was thinking, like, I was watching The Wrath of Khan the other day for some unknown reason. No, it was Star Trek 3 was on. And I was thinking about the Enterprise and how in Star Trek 2 and 3, you know, that first one you see it heavily damaged, the third one it's blown up. And that was, you know, so against the mill of the franchise, because, you know, in the original series they didn't have the money to do that. And then in the movies, it was, you know, it was quite punchy and shocking. And then every film after that, they had to damage the Enterprise or blow it up, and it became run of the mill, and you lose that power that initial moments had. And it feels a bit like that with the TARDIS. You know, seeing it blow up was really exciting at one point in various ways, and now it does seem to be such a standard pyro thing to do that it loses its effect, it loses its drama a little, which is a shame, because the effects and the production, it looks great while they're doing it on the trailer. But you feel like, you know, I keep seeing it too much. You've got to pull back a bit, surely. Just a little bit. Pull back.
It makes me wonder, too, if, you know, the new promo pics that they had released that show kind of more of an orange glow to the TARDIS rather than the blue and purples that we had before. Makes me wonder if they're not doing sometimes I have a feeling in the new series, they tend to go ahead and feel the need to explain things that don't need explaining. You want to change the lights in the TARDIS, don't worry, just change them. We'll accept it. It's not a big deal, you know. Even going as far back as the Five Doctors, you know, they explained him changing the console. Now, granted, it was a massive change, so I get kind of something like that. I get explaining from David Tennant to Matt Smith's change of the console room. But if you want to change some lights or a little bit of decoration there, you don't need to do it. But just knowing that they go in that over-explanation kind of route, it makes me wonder if that's not all it's going to be. Like, here's some fireworks, and then the next episode we'll just have the Doctor going, oh, I had to change the light bulbs. You know, like, is that what they're doing? I don't know for sure. That's just speculation, and I'm just thinking, if it is, it's kind of unnecessary. You know?
How does the Doctor talk again?
Just like that. He says, I've changed the light bulbs. That's him, right? That's how. That's perfect Capaldi. Come on. Okay, Clara, light bulbs are done. Let's go.
Okay, I think we've discovered someone with a worse Scots accent than me. And that's some achievement.
That's not even a fair that you can't judge me on that. Well, you can, but please don't.
Oh, okay. Okay, so shall we move on from the trailer? Let's hope just before we do move on, let's hope we're getting a trailer a week.
That would be fun. I think that would be a lot of fun.
That would be nice, if that is happening.
Makes you wonder, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. Okay. It does. So, I was in Edinburgh recently, which you may know if you tuned in last week. And during my visit there, I photographed an old police box or two. Not for the first time, because I did that the last time I was in Edinburgh, when I was joined by one Brian Terranova.
That's me.
That's you, who also photographed those police boxes.
Yeah.
But they're not the only police boxes you photographed on that trip, or indeed in your life.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I didn't include that one in the album, mainly because it's not the typical design, but you're making me wonder if I shouldn't go back and put that in there. Although technically, looking at the photos, that one is a police information box.
Well, yes, there is that.
I did finger quotations as if everybody in podcast land can see them.
We heard them. You're all right.
Yeah, I thought you did. Awesome. Yeah, no, I decided the other day, I love the prop. It's one of, as any Doctor Who fan kind of feels, it's one of the most iconic things about the show. And it's one of the most creative things about the show as well, that, you know, they went ahead and created this spaceship that could be anything. And yet they still give it one definitive shape, which is both hilarious and brilliant at the same time. And so basically, since bringing mine recently to Philadelphia Wizard World and seeing that there were two others there, which I thought was really fun, and getting to go back, and one of them I'd seen a couple years before and one was fairly new to me, it just made me wonder how many I had seen so far in my lifetime since I have been to the UK and met a couple there, including one real freestanding one, and a couple replicas, etc., even one screen use prop, which I was very happy to see that. Maybe just wonder how many I had seen. And thankfully, all but two or three instances, I actually did get photos of them. So I decided to make a little album that I think I will continue every time I meet a new police box.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Have you ever done anything like that, James?
Sort of. I did. I've caught a couple in my time. I remember when I was very, very young, I managed to pass the one in it that was at Henley Police Academy, I think it was. They had one outside there, which is now no longer there. I think it might be somewhere else now. Obviously, the one down in Earl's Court, I've popped by a couple of times. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think. The ones in Edinburgh, yeah, I've seen, which are very weird. I remember I went up there with my girlfriend at the time, and she was really excited. I think I've said this before, because it was police boxes, and she knew that I'd love them. But of course, they were the wrong shape,
yeah.
And I was very upset. Well, I wasn't very upset, but I made her feel upset. No, I didn't. But she was obviously disappointed that I wasn't as excited as she hoped I'd be, and I still feel dreadful to this day about that.
Okay.
So, yeah, no, I have. And I've also done, rather sadly, a few years ago, I did a Google search, and I located on Google Maps all the ones in the country that were around and posted them on a blog somewhere so you could actually see them in place through the Google Street Map system, which was a bit pathetic.
Some people actually commented on my album, and they had recommended similar, like that there should be an app for smartphones for, you know, police boxes in your area, or even just that you can locate them. Like, if you're going on vacation, is there one in this area? And if you are an owner of that box, or if it's a public box, you can mark whether or not it's up for visits, you know, or like contact information if you wish to visit it or something like that. And I thought that would be really cool. My box, unfortunately, when it's not at a convention right now, sits in pieces because I don't have the storage space in my temporary living conditions. But I know a couple of them that are freestanding, including one a friend of mine made. And I want to say Atlanta. I'm probably butchering where it's at, but it's a free little library, which is very cool. You know, like you can just go to this little police library box, which is made in a new series kind of fashion, and all of the panels, all the little square panels, are doors that open up to reveal whatever books are in the free little library. So it's very cool, like how many people can go ahead and just visit things like that, and how many of them are essentially our disposal to do so, especially with, like you said, the Earl's Court box. And there's another one in the UK, which is very classic style, TARDIS, and I forget where it is. I'd have to look it up for you, but it's one that even I haven't gotten to see, which I want to put on my list the next time I'm in the UK. But yeah, I think that's fun. I like the Google Maps idea that you did, and I thought the app was a great idea, and I really think it would be great, especially since there are clearly more fan-built police boxes in the world now than probably there ever were police boxes. So it would be so nice to have them archived. And I am part of a group on Facebook called the TARDIS Owners Club, where there's quite a few of them, and obviously that would be a great place to start. And then, of course, there's the TARDIS Builders Guild, which is a nice website.
It's all beginning to sound a bit like Terry Pratchett.
Mm.
All these gills. Do you recall when we went to when you were over here last, and we went to Weatherby, and you took the photos of you stood outside that police box?
Yes. Yeah, that's in my album. That's brilliant. And actually, since we had been there, I actually found out the maker of that box, because when we saw it, we knew it was a replica.
Mm.
But, you know, I had no idea who had made it. We just thought it was awesome that it was standing. It's actually standing outside of the Weatherby police station.
Yeah.
Right. Which to me was cool that this place actually was like, yeah, we want a police box. Let's just put it out there. And apparently it was a company called Once Upon a Way who had made it. Mm-hmm. Never heard of them, but I think that's great. I think it's really cool that, you know, they went ahead and they wanted a police box. So to do so, they had a replica put there. You know, I don't know. There's just something neat about that. Rather than like, hey, we still have one of the freestanding actual police boxes, they said we want one.
Yeah. There's a really hideous one that's appeared in Boscombe, which is down the very south of the country, which is a working one that's been built to sort of showcase the police in that area. And it has a medical kit and things in there. But it is a real ugly monster.
Isn't that a beast? It's like made of steel. Is that the one
yes,
you're talking about?
Yes, yeah. Yes.
It's kind of, it's almost new series looking, but it's way too wide.
Yeah, you know the one I mean.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, you'd be able to knock the roof off a Dalek with that, wouldn't you?
Right, yeah. Yes, you would, wouldn't you?
Just going back to Weatherby, on that day, dear listener, when Brian was here, we were limited for time, as I recall. I think you were only here for 3 or 4 days. So on that day, we went to Weatherby first, then we went to Harrogate and had tea at Betty's, or breakfast at Betty's even, which, dear listener, is one of the finest experiences you will ever have. After that, we went to York. And then on the evening, we drove back via Whitby back to Casterbridge Towers here in Redcar. Now, we missed a TARDIS out. We missed a police box.
Oh, no, did we?
Yeah, because there's one in Scarborough, which is about 30 miles down the coast from Whitby, or 20 miles down the coast from Whitby. And it's not the typical TARDIS design, although it is definitely a police box, and it is a little bit of a shame that we did miss that one out, to be honest with you. I'm quite sad about that now.
Well, you know, I am going to come back the second that you know, so my life situation with my house selling changes. You know, I'm making it back over there, so we're putting that one on the list.
That looks very similar to the one in Leicester, because that's a side shot of it, isn't it?
If the
front shot, it's a longer one, a bit like the is it not? I could be wrong. A bit like the Edinburgh, in the sense that it's not.
No, it's a box. No,
it is actually a box.
It's all the same like that all the way.
Oh, wow, look at that.
Yeah, because there's one in Leicester, which is a bit, right, a bit sort of a mix of the two, as I recall.
No, really. I'm getting the impression from some of these photos that there might actually be two in Scarborough, but I was only aware of one. But last time I went to Scarborough, I can't remember seeing it, so I don't know if they've possibly moved it.
I'm sorry, the one that I was talking about earlier, it says that it is the Crick Tramway Village. Familiar to you guys at all?
No.
I know the one. It's a very good one.
Yeah, it's extremely good.
Very well maintained.
It actually looks very much like the season 18 TARDIS that was used for Tom Baker. There are differences, but it's very much in that style.
It sits outside a railway museum, doesn't it?
I'm looking at it now.
Yeah.
You can find quite a lot of close-up shots of that if you go to the right places.
I hear it's in need of repair, though, from a few people who have been to it. So,
well, it's the chameleon circuit, isn't it?
To be fair, they do update it quite frequently. I mean, there was at one point it had a very light blue coat, and they've more recently given it a sort of more traditional one. It looks a lot better than it did. So, yeah, they do. I think it's quite it's something they're quite proud of. So, yeah, I'm just looking at the photos now. It has had a bit of a work.
Well, but it's definitely some things to put on the next UK trip for me, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think that'd be a very interesting one to see.
And Christian has inspired me to go ahead and upload the Scottish police information box to my album too.
Oh, good. I'm delighted by that. Okay, let's move on then. It's recommendations time, gentlemen.
Already?
Yeah.
Seems very quick.
It does. Shall we try and pad it out a bit?
Ooh.
Okay, Brian, you weren't here last time. Do you have a recommendation for our listener?
You know, this is sad. I actually don't.
Oh, dear.
You know what? Okay, actually, I thought about this the other day. At least it was something I was thinking. DVDs, books, movies, I don't know, radio dramas, all of these things are really fun and they're fantastic. But something that's had me going this past weekend anyway is put them down for a day. Go outside, see your friends, do something fun. That is my recommendation. Because while they're great, while they're fun, I have recently just been having some fantastic conversations with a friend of mine who we have no similar interests like these things to discuss. It was just life stuff. It was interesting debates. It was very fun, and it was great experience just to be wandering around the city as well. And that is my recommendation. Take a break from all of these other things for a little while and do something in life rather than in front of your computer or TV for a little bit.
That's right. Oh, this is why I said we should have David Duchovny on. Yeah, it's as if anyone's going to do that.
Well, it's a good thing to do before Series 8 starts.
Yes, I guess so. I mean, it's been quite nice. It's been a bit hot recently. But, you know, like today, I went out for a little walk and around the village, and it was really nice. It was a good breeze, good light.
That'll have been your butler fanning you, wouldn't it?
I know. There was a bit of a commotion at the church as Azrael was trying to sort of manifest himself again. But, you know, you can just slip under his legs and head on round the churchyard, and it's not really a big problem. Sometimes it is good to sort of get away and enjoy something which isn't so intense. So what about you, Christian? What have you been recommending this week?
Oh, well, I'm still on Engines of War, I think, really. Can I recommend anything other than Engines of War? You know, when you come back from holiday, you're kind of recovering from the holiday. And, you know, getting your house in order and all that sort of thing. So really all I've had time to do is flick through Engines of War. So I'm about a third through it now and enjoying it still. And as I said last time, the War Doctor is perfectly captured. There is a little bit... Now, this is a bit of a bugbear of mine, okay? Because I read a... As this may surprise one or two of you, dear listeners, but I'm actually... I can actually be termed as a professional writer because I write and I get paid for it and I pay the bills with it and I do things with the money. You know, I don't have another job. That's what I do. So in order to facilitate this and hopefully one day at least improve myself, I'm a subscriber to Writing Magazine, and they often have pretty much every issue have various tips on writing and, you know, what publishers are looking for, what readers are looking for. And one of these things is to do with exposition and related to descriptions and how these things should, where possible, be related by dialogue. Now, George Mann, who's written Engines of War, is no slouch in the writing department. He's got quite a few credits to his name. And a big chunk of this book so far has been long tracts of descriptive text. A void of dialogue, largely. I'm not saying there's no dialogue or anything like that, because there's a lot of action in this first third of the book. And I wouldn't want to detract from the quality, because it's a very good tale that he's telling so far. That leads me into this little position. Which way do you go? Which way do you guys go, Brian and James? When you're reading a book, do you want lots of dialogue and do you want the information to come through in the dialogue naturally? Or do you want the author to just pause things for a moment, take a semi-sidestep and describe the scene to you?
I'm a bit of a tough one with those things. I am not the big reader that most people are. Not to say that I don't enjoy reading. I enjoy very few things. Like, I love Douglas Adams' Hitchhiker's Guide series because I loved his writing style. But other writers that I have read, when they get to, you know, a couple pages worth of descriptive dialogue on the color of somebody's shirt, I start to really lose interest in the book. I think obviously you need descriptive dialogue because it is a book, you need to know what's going on, but I think that some people go a little too heavy with it, which just turns me off, which is why I generally prefer a visual medium like film or TV shows to books. I've tended more so in later years to enjoy reading books like factual books, how things were made, or so on like that. I tend to prefer them over storybooks because I just find that the way people tell stories in books just doesn't gel with the way I like to read them or hear them.
I think with people like Adams and Terry Pratchett, they could
both of them could have written a book with no dialogue in it at all, and no one would care or notice because of the way they address the reader. James, what about you?
I personally, I am not a big fan of description. I will not pretend that I am a massive reader. I won't pretend that I am a literary critic. I'm not a big fan of poetry either. So I tend to like things that flow rather than indulge. And I mean, I've been writing my own book for the last, well, I started writing out ideas about 10 years ago, and then being an amateur, just slowly learning what works, what doesn't, what isn't, you know, connecting with me. And say from last, I think over the last year, I've written the first book of two that I want to write, and that's about 100,000 words or so. And I know that I tend to sort of slip more comfortably into the dialogue and necessary description. I don't like embellishment of color too much. I think it's simply because I'm not a reader who sits in the moment particularly. I think if you're into poetry, I think you're probably more into people. You're more likely to be someone who sort of sits into the moment of a book. So, you know, if you read Thomas Hardy, you will enjoy the, you know, three pages of heavy description of the late summer fields.
Yeah.
Than say, you know, someone who might. I think that's why I've always quite liked TV tie-in books, because they go on the presumption that you know the characters, you know the situation, just get on with the story. And so I'm very unsnobbish with books like that. I do like to just sort of move straight through them, unless it is something. No, I mean, even when it comes down to things which are, you know, I mean, it's like Sherlock Holmes. One of the reasons I always liked Sherlock Holmes as their short stories was because the focus was on the dialogue, because it was done as a first person narrative most of the time. In fact, all the time, from one person or the other. And so you just flowed with what they were seeing. So, you know, as a first-person narrative, you don't really spend too much time dealing with the scene. You're dealing with the circumstance. So it flows faster, doesn't it? So, yeah, I think I sit with Brian a bit on this.
Okay.
What about you, Fat Face?
Well, other than developing a double chin while I've been reading the books... No, I am more towards... I mean, when I'm writing my stuff, I tend not to do descriptive text unless it's like setting the scene for something like action-y. When I'm writing my books. My God, that sounds pompous, doesn't it?
Well, action scenes are very difficult in books, aren't they? I mean, I started doing ones because the story I wrote has quite a lot of action, but I realised fairly early on that, and you know, you can't, it can just become too comic book. You can't really stage action very well unless you're an extremely talented writer, I think. So you're best backing away from action as much as you can.
As much as you can, yeah. So the one or two moments in the Nanowrimo that I started a couple of years ago and again didn't manage to get to the end of, although I've got higher hopes for this time around.
Like me.
Yeah, well, it's just time. That was the only part that had a lot of descriptive text. The rest of it was largely dialogue and making sure that there was a mystery there to keep me going and to keep the eventual reader reading, essentially. I'm still baffled by the whole thing. I know it's different for different people, and so maybe the real secret is finding a balance in there.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose also, as I say, it depends on what you like. But I mean, when I go into description, it's about either having to set the scene or having to remind people of the scene for relevant reason, either because you feel that it's gone too long. They might have lost the feeling of where the characters are or where they are in relation to everything else, or something's about to occur and you want to set that up. So you're sort of sleight of hand reminding people where the situation is. So it's very rarely about colour. It's about setting up a stage or about informing the audiences where they need to be informed about the stage to set up. So I suppose I write a little in a sort of script way in that sense. So not saying it's just dialogue, but in that sort of script approach where you're thinking in the capacity of the story rather than enjoying the actual the prose, which some authors do. And that's great. I think, you know, we've all got different things, but yeah.
Well, and there's also things that if somebody is supposed to be a spy, for instance, and they walk into a room and you want to make mention that they've noticed like 15 yeah. different things already from the first 5 seconds of walking in the room. That's kind of important because that's yeah. character development. And I get that. So there's definitely descriptive dialogue that is necessary. And like I said, certainly in a book form, descriptive dialogue is always going to be necessary in some way. I just think that some people go a little too far with it. And maybe those people should be writing things. I don't know, like maybe they should be fashion designers if they like clothes so much. I don't really know the color of the shirt so badly, you know? And maybe there's something that I've missed in reading those books that was so important with the color of that shirt. And I know in some cases, you know, like they're trying color can be a very emotion connected kind of thing. So I get that. And I get that they're trying to set certain things like that up. But like I said, when you get into like a couple pages or even two pages, one page of just that alone, it's too much to me.
Oh, that's interesting. We could have done a podcast on this, couldn't we?
Possibly, we could one day. Well, I'll tell you what, on the topic of books, Brian, what is your favourite book of all time?
You know, honestly, I've already mentioned it. It's definitely, and I have to probably say it's the whole thing, but it's got to be the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy
series.
No,
it's not a book. Come on. No.
You want me to choose one? No, yeah. You know, I will choose one. I actually really enjoy the third one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Christ. You know, since I'm so used to just having it, I have the big Bible version of all five.
Life, Universe,
and
Everything.
And the short story. Yeah.
That's the first one.
So
I read.
Life, the Universe, and Everything. Thank you. That one. And I like the setup. I like the fact that as much as I enjoy how Douglas can kind of just be all over the place with his story, like one of my favorite things is how you can walk into a room and he wants to introduce these two new characters, but he spends two pages on a book entry about something completely ridiculous that is related and unrelated. But I love that. And then you get back there. I love how he can do that. But I think what I actually really liked about Life, the Universe, and Everything was is that there was actually a goal for the characters aside from just essentially their survival. You know, they had to stop this war. And I just really liked a lot of things that happened in it and the character interactions and so on.
Is this the Cricket Man one?
Yes.
Yeah, this is the first one I read. Which is the one where Arthur Dent learns to fly?
That's the fourth one.
Is that the fourth one?
So Long and Thanks for All the Fish.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which I kind of like because unlike what Douglas Adams tends to do, it has a resolution, which is a shame that in the sense that he went on and did the fifth, which was never quite as well received and was very downbeat in comparison because it was just nice after having Arthur have crap after crap after crap, including like his world being destroyed, to actually leave him in a good place. And then you just feel like, why? Should have just left it and moved on after that. But
although the fifth book, while definitely the fourth and fifth book, in my opinion, aren't as strong as the first three, they're still good. The fifth book has one of my favorite character moments in the entire series. And, you know, it's one of those things where people have had X amount of years for spoilers. So I'm going to go ahead and tell you because it's just my favorite thing. But it's when Ford Prefect, who is a character I adore, goes back to the Hitchhiker's offices and he gets attacked by those robots. So his brilliant idea is to jump out the window of like, I don't know, like the 200th floor or something like that with no way of actually saving himself. He just jumps out the window because it's better than facing these robots. And then when there's another like little robot that he had reprogrammed to be his friend, essentially saves his life, brings him back into like, I don't know, the 143rd floor. He's faced yet again by robots who want to kill him. And his brilliant plan, once again, is to jump out the window again. I love that. I just found that so hilarious. And I'm so upset that a TV series and movie version of this story has never been successful because I would have just loved to have seen that moment happen on screen. Although we do have the radio dramas where you get to have that, which is fantastic. But I don't know. I just felt for the character that he is and for the writer that Douglas is, that moment is just too brilliantly conceived. I think it's so hilarious.
I think my favorite moment's possibly in the second one. I mean, it's actually Hitchhiker's Towers again, where it's Marvin versus the massive tank in the H-strut, where he convinces the tank to actually blow up the floor, and the tank just plummets to its death. And there's some lovely moments. There's some bit. I mean, the fifth book, I like the beginning bit with the artificial intelligence in the ship, which has the issue with the damage control, which is always, you know, there's a long running science fiction joke, you know, when the damage control can no longer realize because it's damaged, etc. I would say it's funny. My favorite book. I mean, it depends on what you like, isn't it? There's like different, it's like films. Like, what's your favorite film? You think, well, films are different. You can't. I'd say comedy wise, I normally always carry around Hitchhikers. The first book is my favourite out of the lot. But Summer Lightning by P.G. Woodhouse, which is one of, I hate to say it now since they've massacred it on BBC One, is one of the Blandings novels.
Right.
Which is very, very funny. Are you not
a fan of the Blandings series?
No, it totally misses the whole crux of what P.G. Woodhouse is about.
Yeah.
And that's about not having, it's about people being a caricature and silly, but not seeming so because it's their world.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, as soon as you make them cartoons, you lose the comic value of them. And that's what, the Hugh Laurie, Stephen Fry version did so well.
Yes.
It sent these characters up, but it made them believable. It wasn't farcical. And I don't think Woodhouse should ever seem farcical. It should just have farcical elements.
Like
but anyway,
Doctor Who.
Well, yeah, absolutely. It just, it felt like someone just didn't understand really, or didn't feel confident enough with the material to let the actors and the makeup artists and everyone just play it straight. And let the comedy of the story play itself out. So yeah, P.G. Woodhouse is I love that. I really enjoy any of the Sherlock Holmes ones. I always enjoy in a spare moment if I ever have one. One book I do recommend if you've not read it is Homicide: Life on the Killing Street, which is what Homicide and The Wire was based on, the TV shows. A very good book written by a journalist who spends a year in the homicide department in Baltimore, and is a fascinating read. I keep that on me as well. These are sort of books that I keep on me. And going back to Star Trek, for years as a teenager, Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home by Vonda McIntyre. Very good book. It's, you know, we're talking about what makes a readable book, and she finds a fantastic ability to make, you know, take what is essentially a screenplay, put it into a book form where it's not just dull, but just reads and flows so well, but doesn't feel like, you know, you're just reading a screenplay. She did the third Star Trek book, and the third of that isn't even in the film. So, you know, she's a very good author if you like those sort of things. Can I just actually give my recommendation before we finish? Because I feel obliged.
If you'd like to, yeah.
Recommendations?
Well, yeah, because last week I sort of had a bit of a... not a rant, but I was a bit upset about the Doctor Who Legacy game. For those who didn't read, they upgraded to 2.2 last week, and in doing so, there was a bug emerged for some people where the cloud save didn't
including
seem to take,
James.
Especially James. The cloud save didn't save, and all the characters that you spent hours building up in that sort of RPG scenario were now like 2 months behind. And at the time, I'd been 2 days and I had no reply. I had replied during the week and they said they're trying to sort it out. They're saying they're backlogged. And, you know, if they've just done an upgrade and there's been a patch as well, that's fair enough. So there's no resolution yet for me. But so far, their communication has been very polite and encouraging. So still waiting to see whether they can sort it. And they might not be able to, you know, because game development can be like that. Some things happen and you just can't sort it. It could be that's just life. You know, you don't blame them for that. It's just unfortunate. I don't think I'd go back to it if that is the case because it's just too much lost. But just having to see. But I think it'd be just nice to sort of say that, yeah, bugs happen, problems happen, not happy, but, you know, they've still got a good rapport with the people who use the game. They've got a very good customer service.
I had an earlier load of save games that went missing when I reinstalled Android, and I thought they were in the cloud, but apparently they were not.
Was this for Legacy?
For Legacy, yeah.
That's exactly what I happened, because mine was definitely cloud saved the week before. Even, you know, came up successful cloud save, okay? So it was all definitely cloud saved. The upgrade to 2.2 failed on Android. There was a few issues, and I think they sent out a way of actually getting around it. But at the time, I thought, well, if it's cloud saved, I can just reinstall it, and the cloud save will just bring it back. But it didn't. It did, as you say. So they do definitely have some issue with the cloud save, by the sounds of it, which is worrying.
Was yours Android or Kindle? I thought you had a Kindle.
Oh, so mine was Kindle, yeah.
Right, okay.
Thinking because it's similar to Android.
Okay.
Yes, no, it's Amazon software. So, but it's the same issue.
Yeah,
which sounds like it's an issue, a remote issue with the cloud save rather than the devices. I don't know. As I say, I'm still waiting to hear back on this. I'll give them another nudge this week so they don't forget, because I think it is important that whatever the issue is, that they find a way around it, even if it means that we suffered for it.
Yes. Okay. There is one other thing that we need to talk about this week. And
oh, yes.
It earlier,
which What's
that? Is, it's not a heavy one. It's our recent article about the Big Finish plays on SoundCloud.
Oh, yes.
Did you guys see this?
Well, yeah, I'd actually seen this a while ago, and indulged in it a little on my computer, not on my mobile though. So I was aware of it.
Right, no, this is news to me.
Yeah, so there's a handful of Big Finish plays, one-off ones, not full, not like multiple part stories, but one-offs have been put on SoundCloud, which means you can pretty much, you can listen to Big Finish for free. So if you're afraid, if you've been kind of a bit nervous about getting into Big Finish and the big commitment that it might turn into for you, you can get a sample for free.
It's like drugs, isn't it?
Well, is
it, you know, they give you the sample first of all.
Well, it is, isn't it?
Then they'll see if you come back to the street corner. Oh, why are homicide references? Carry on.
Yes. So you've got this collection of Big Finish plays on SoundCloud, so you can just listen to them on your computer or on your phone. And in our guide, we show how to listen to them on your phone. That's essentially what the point of it was, because you can do it anyway. I mean, I sat listening to Urgent Calls, which I'd missed, which is really, really good.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a brilliant one.
And so I would heartily recommend you, at the very least, taking a look at the article that we wrote about how easy it is to do this.
Yeah.
And if it feels too much for you, then fine. It's too much for you. But really, it isn't much effort at all. You can just go to SoundCloud, do a search, select your preferred doctor and click play.
Absolutely. They've got a few on there. They've got Unit 1. They've got the Mutant Phase.
Mutant Phase is there,
a brilliant, is a brilliant story. Well worth listening to with Davison and
Mutant Phase is a four-part story, though.
Yeah,
it is. They've got the whole thing.
Wow. The rest of them are one-off ones. Yeah. But that one's a four. That was a full serial, yeah.
So it's a really worth, and as I say, if it gets you into Big Finish, which I think the more we've been talking about the last few weeks, the more impressed I am about them. As we were saying, the fact that they take continuity very well, but they don't take it to be nerdy with it. They take it to build stories from it, which is why I think some of their stories have made it onto, you know, have like Jubilee and certainly sort of Spare Parts to a degree, have made it to the Doctor Show, because they are just very well thought out stories, taking logical ideas based on these monsters. It's a brilliant range. It really is. It's really good.
Okay. Well, that brings us nicely to the end. Do try Big Finish through that means if you haven't tried Big Finish before. And we will be back next time, hopefully with more positive news than, you know, episodes 6 to 12 having been leaked.
Well, we have been criticised for being, again, for being overly critical. So my other recommendation is to watch Stargate.
Okay.
So I was told off for that.
Were you really?
For knocking
Stargate. So yeah, please watch it and don't complain to me when you've found that you've wasted 50 minutes of your life.
Still watching it. I'm on season 6 right now, and I can tell you that I just watched one of the best episodes that they had ever done, which was an episode where Colonel Jack O'Neill.
Captain Jack.
I'm so used to saying Captain Jack, it's ridiculous. Was getting tortured by the Goa'uld, and it was just a brilliantly done episode, I feel. I know James may not agree, but I felt they covered it extremely well, all the reasons why and how and everybody's motives within the story. I thought it was very well done. So yeah, I still recommend the show, damn it, James.
I like the film, personally. I just wanted to say
that. Oh, good Lord.
You know what? I want to say something on that, too. I have said for years, I watched the film, I wasn't really that impressed, and I loved the TV show after some coaxing from my brother who kept telling me how good it was. And I was like, yeah, but I wasn't really into that film. Funny thing is, I got my girlfriend to watch a couple of them because, you know, it's a TV show. It's a serious science fiction show with some good humor to it, and they take it very well. And I knew that she would kind of like that, and she did. So it got me more interested to watch more, and I went back and I watched the film. It's a hell of a lot better than I ever gave it credit for. It's really good. I was surprised. For some reason, for years, I just kept thinking like, no, this wasn't so good. The TV show did it so much better. But no, the movie is very good too. To hear you say that just reminded me. But
it's the only time you'll ever get me to sit down in front of a TV with Kurt Russell on it. Put it that way.
Yes, I will not.
Yeah, no, I'm similar like that. I find I can't get into his stuff. It's weird that.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, except for Big Trouble in Little China.
Oh.
Yeah, it's all right. Yeah.
Come on, that's silly. It's not like it's not a genius film, but it's silly. It has good, funny moments.
Okay. So, as I said, we'll be back next time, dear listener. We hope you enjoyed this week's podcast with a kicking car. Until then, goodbye.
Kicking car.
Kicking car. Yeah.
Car.
Kicking car is what I said.
Well, yeah, I kind of disturbed what I thought you said.
No one asked me what my favorite book was.
Hey, what's your favorite book?
Well, I'm not entirely certain. I think probably the best book I've read over the last 10 years or so is probably Going Postal by Terry Pratchett.
You see, this is the reason we didn't ask, because we're not interested.